Greater Santon and beyond. Get ready for the Santon Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and beyond, this is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good podcast platforms. I'm Alexander Leipner, and this is edition 133. It's week 41 of 2023, and the heat is on. And I'm excited to be with you again. If you'd like to send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, you can do so during the show. You can email editor@santontimes.co.za, or you can connect on social media at Santon Times, or visit the website www.santontimes.co.za. And if you're listening live on Mix 93.8 and not at a later stage on a podcast, you can use the WhatsApp line, which is open on 0848220938. That's 0848220938. And a special welcome to everyone listening in Johannesburg and Pretoria, across South Africa, or anywhere else in the world. If you're listening online or on air, wherever you are, I'm happy to report that all is well in Santon Land. And I'm joined once more by my man behind the mixing desk, Vincenzo. And good to see you again. And I hope everyone listening enjoyed the past 2 weeks where we ran some interviews with game show masters of yesteryear. I must say, I quite enjoyed putting those two special editions together, tracking everyone down, finding out where everyone is, and then, of course, having those conversations. And Adrian, he reached out on the WhatsApp line and commented and said, wow, what an incredible interview with Jeremy Maggs and Melanie Walker, top drawer. And Adrian, thanks so much for making the time to send that through and also for listening. And I'm glad that you thoroughly enjoyed those conversations. I took a brief trip to Europe for a family wedding, and I'll be sharing some of my observations and experiences a little bit later on. And then I get back to South Africa, and apart from load shedding and the odd water cuts, I see now we've got issues with shortages of eggs everywhere. I'm going to have to go buy some chickens now, along with my inverter and water tank. I mean, it never fails to amaze me and never fails to keep you on your toes. South Africa. But coming back, I can't believe how unbelievably hot it is at the moment. I don't know how you feel, but it is becoming almost impossible to try and sleep in this weather. And if you've got some interesting ways of keeping cool and managing to get through these hot nights, and when I say hot, I'm talking about temperature hot, you know, it's a family show, so don't share all your hot night ideas. But how are you keeping cool with the temperatures going through the roof? Coming up on this week's show, it's one of South Africa's most well-known wine labels, and I catch up with the CEO of a wine farm that has marked a major milestone, and many of you might know this particular wine label. Then she was Nelson Mandela's personal chef for over 20 years, and she has now launched her second cookbook, and I sit down with her to hear her story, and I encourage you to stay tuned for that. It's a really great conversation. And finally, I wrap up the hour with a quick recap of my observations and impressions of Germany in 2023. This and more coming up shortly, but it's time to get the hour going with our first bit of music. And here's one that I've picked up on my travels. And this is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8.
Promote your brand. Advertise your business.
Our audience could be your next client. Contact the Santon Times today.
The latest news.
The biggest names.
The best destinations.
The hottest entertainment. This is the Santon Times Hour.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good podcast platforms wherever you are in the world. And there was Alan Walker, Dash Berlin, and Vic Starr with Better Off Alone Part 3. Remember that, Better Off Alone? I think it was Alice DJ that brought that out years ago. Here's a new take on that. Well, We haven't done this in a while, but let's take a look at some headlines for this week. A new name, but I suspect the same frustrations as people make their way through traffic every single day. William Nicol Drive officially renamed to Winnie Mandela Drive. And I see they didn't go with the full name as well. But I suppose that would have been a very, very long sign and probably not very practical. But I think everyone knows Winnie Mandela, especially internationally. And the new name was unveiled at a ceremony in Sandton while I was away. But I see there was a lot of festivities and celebrations. And I think the name is probably settled in by now. I don't know if you've started using it in conversation, but have you adjusted to the new name? How do you feel about multiple renamings taking place across the city? Are you managing to remember some of the new names? Are you still referring to some of the places with old names? Let me know. I'd be quite interested to hear. Then Black Coffee performed at Madison Square Garden this past weekend. I think he's the first South African to ever have done so. And he had a big send-off party. I think it was last week or the week before that in Sandton. And renowned artists, A-list actors and influencers came together to mark this moment. And, you know, I've reached out to Black Coffee's team so often to try and get an interview with him. Just to chat to us about, like, his success, what he's been doing, all these things. And you know how difficult it is. Anyway, let's leave the headlines there for this week. After the break, I'm joined by the CEO of Canonkop, Johan Kriecher, as the legendary wine label celebrates its 50th anniversary. Keep listening.
Follow the Sandton Times on social media.
At Sandton Times.
Now's the time to invest in you. Get ready to shine with Virgin Active this summer. Start with a free bag plus the rest of October on us. Level up and get the freedom to gym at any club with a premier membership and score 25% off fees. Or get the family moving and bag 40% off monthly fees. Call 0860 Get Fit or visit your nearest club to get started. You've got this, and we've got you. VirginActive.co.za. T's and C's apply.
The best of talk and music in 1 hour. This is the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good podcast platforms wherever you are in the world. And as we get this week's show on the road, I'm thrilled to be joined by a man who is synonymous with probably one of South Africa's better known wine brands, if not one of the best known wine brands. And we know what a competitive industry that is. But this year, this particular brand is celebrating its 50th anniversary. And if you are a wine lover or if you're not that familiar with wines, you've probably heard of Canonkop. His name's Johan Kriecher. He's the CEO of Canonkop Wine Estate. And Johan, as we get things going, let me congratulate you on this magnificent milestone.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been a long road. Many ups, but also many downs as well. But yeah, it's been a fantastic road that we've had over the past 50 years. Much to celebrate and much to look forward to.
Well, I hope we get a chance to reminisce and also look forward to the years to come for Canonkop. But before we go there, I mean, Canonkop has a very rich generational history. And maybe you could just give us a bit of an idea of the story behind the name Canonkop and its significance to the estate.
Yeah, right behind our property, our farm, which is situated on the slopes of the Simonsberg Mountain, approximately 7 kilometers outside the center of Stellenbosch. On this mountain, there's a hillock there. And about 200 years ago, they had a cannon on that hill, from where they fired cannons. Whenever a ship came into Cape Town Harbor, because you would see Cape Town Harbor from there. And then, well, we didn't fight a war. When the farmers, those days, before cell phones and the lot, even before telex machines, they heard the shot, and all the farmers in the vicinity knew they could go and trade some meat and vegetables and obviously wine as well. What? So it was a signal cannon.
That's remarkable. It's like the
Canonkop, meaning like Cannon Hill in English.
So this was the ancient WhatsApp group of its time.
Probably yes.
Well, it's unbelievable.
And it worked quite effectively. It worked very well because there was no load shedding those days.
it would probably still work very well. And I think maybe you might have to consider bringing that back again as an alternative when the power goes off. But what eventually drove the decision to make it a wine farm and not anything else?
In 1931, my father, great-grandfather, Paul Sauer, inherited the property and started making wine in 1942. In those days, they didn't have the capital to build a proper distribution network, so they made wine, and then they sold off their wine in bulk to some of the wholesale distributors in Stellenbosch. And then in 1973, exactly 50 years ago, we started bottling our own wines under the Canonical brand. And hence, we now have 50 years of the brand name available in the market locally, and even more so today internationally.
Amazing. And how has his legacy influenced the way that you approach winemaking and the way you run the estate?
Very many things has changed in the meantime. Although I have to say that he was one of the first wine producers to start planting Pinotage, which is one of the varietal wines that Canonkop has become famous for locally, and as I've said previously, internationally as well. So he imprinted the concept of red wines on Canonkop, and more so to produce top quality wines. Because he knew at that stage already that on the slopes of the Simonsberg Mountain, where we are situated, the soil types and the weather conditions, the climate conditions, the winds that we have, those are very much more suitable towards producing Cabernet Sauvignon and Pinotage. And as of today, 50 years later, our focus still remains on Pinotage and Cabernet Sauvignon, because that is basically, or was, a terroir decision. We didn't plant Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc because we loved it. We planted suitable red varietals to fit the specific soil types and terroir that we have at this specific property.
Yeah, I mean, you have become unbelievably well-known for your Cabernet Sauvignon and also your Pinotage. I think it's one that I particularly enjoy as well from Canonkop. You transitioned from a career in law and export marketing into the wine estate. What motivated you to join a family business? And did your unique background also contribute quite a bit to the growth of the business?
Yeah, probably did contribute a little bit. But I, since the age of six, I fell in love with wine, believe it or not. Mm. I started drinking wine since I was six, and during lunchtimes or dinner, wines were always available on our lunch or dinner table. And I developed a passion. And even as of today, wine is one of my passions. But not having any training on wine making per se, I love to say that I'm not in the wine business, I'm in the business of wine. So I tried to put all the loose ends together, and yeah, this is where we are today.
And you're in a very fortunate position. I mean, like I said, the wine industry as an outsider, I think, looks like a very competitive business, and it's all about recognizing that label on the shelves. If you had to pick one of your favorite vintages or your favorite wines coming out of Canonkop, which bottle would that be?
That's a rather problematical question, because wine, as we all know, is a very subjective matter. It depends on your mood. It depends on your wife's mood. It depends on your children's mood. What is the more suitable wine that you're going to enjoy tonight? But by and large, I'm into red wines, as it so happened. And if I have to take out specific vintages, it would probably be our maiden 1973 vintage, which we tasted about 6 weeks ago when we celebrated our 50th in central London. And then of late, there were quite a few vintages that really stood out, being 2001, 2003, 2009, 2015, 2017, and hopefully also 2023.
Well, there's a couple of vintages to look out for next time you are shopping or you are buying wine on an auction. Maybe you can pick up one of those. Going forward, what is your outlook for Canonkop going for the next 50 years? What are you hoping to achieve? And what is the direction that you're going to be taking for the wine estate?
It's basically all built around improving quality continuously. But also saying that you always have got to have a balance between quality and value. And this I can't stretch more, that it doesn't necessarily always have to be a so-called expensive wine or a top quality wine. Our message has always been to enjoy what appeals to your palate, of balancing value for money and also always in the process of uplifting quality with new technology and the like.
Well, there you have it. 50 years of Canonkop Wine Estate, and I'm joined by Johan Kriecher, CEO of the estate. It's been great having you on, and once again, congratulations to you and the team on marking this milestone. It's the bottom of the hour on the Santon Times Hour. It's time for a quick musical break, and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
For more,
the Santon Times Hour continues.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Ray Dalton with Do It Again. My name is Alexander Leipner, and you know how this works. If you listen to the show regularly or you're listening for the very first time, well, welcome to you and welcome to the Santon Times Hour. If there's anything that sounded good on the show that you heard that you can't quite remember the names or the details, well, we try and put up the details up on the website under show notes for this particular episode. And you can do so by visiting www.santontimes.co.za and get a detailed breakdown of everything discussed on this week's edition. Also, be sure to check out the social media accounts and follow those at Santon Times, and feel free to engage on those with a tweet, a WhatsApp, a DM, a voice note, or whatever else works for you. And you can also use the hashtag Santon Times Hour. A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Xoliswa Ndoyiya at Sanctuary Mandela in Houghton. And for over 20 years, she was Nelson Mandela's personal chef. And she's now released her second cookbook titled Made with Love, Recipes and Memories from Nelson Mandela's Personal Chef. She started working for Madiba soon after he was released from prison. And this interview for the Santon Times Hour was recorded in Room 1. At Sanctuary Mandela, which has been turned into a boutique hotel. Unbelievable. If you have a chance to go and visit this place, please do so. And Room 1 is called Mr. President, as all of the 9 rooms at the residence are dedicated to one of the decades of Mandela's life. And this particular room was his actual bedroom whilst he lived at the house. And the hospitality team has done an incredible job in capturing moments and artifacts across the property to take a step back in time and help you reflect on his life and presidency. I kicked off my conversation with Xoliswa by asking her how she was feeling at this time.
I've got mixed emotions, I must say. I'm happy, I'm overwhelmed, I'm nervous, but I know that at the end of the day, I am happy about my work.
Where do you think those feelings are coming from right now?
These feelings are coming from that I had served an icon, and then I had come back to a place where I've met him, and all what made me to meet him was all about food. And then I told myself that I will never stop cooking. I will never be a person that says that I've done it, so I cannot be doing it anymore, because I want to keep it going. One of the emotions that I have is that all what is in this book is what I've been telling myself I will do one day. This is a dream come true. And more especially when it's a second book, because my first book did well, but didn't well for me. So I just said to myself, this second book is my book, it's my baby, and then I'm going to look after it.
Well, let's rewind the clock a bit to the time when you met Nelson Mandela. How did you become a chef? How did this entire journey start?
It's a long journey. It's a long story. And if I had to start by saying that it has been a very generous and a very special journey that I had with Dada, and to serve him and to make sure that I I contributed more, especially not only in his life as a chef, but to many people that they were surrounding him, like family, like friends and comrades, and everybody, even the presidents of most of the countries. So what I can say, the day that I met Dada, I never thought I was coming to meet Dada in this house. A friend of mine who believed in me and trusted me in my cooking is the one who made this dream to come true for me. Gloria, that the lady that I came back from home with, Queenstown, she just told Dada that she would like to work with me, and then she made a plan that I will have to go and meet with her at Shell House, which it was the ANC headquarters by then. And I went there to go and meet Gloria, but surprisingly, a guy came to pick me up because I had told Gloria what I'm wearing. And from nowhere, she just changed that. I cannot make it on time. I'm sending somebody to pick you up. Only to find out the guy that is picking me up is the guy who is taking me to the office. So when I got there, I got into a room full of guys and with a black and white suits, and they were not promising with their smiles, but they were intimidating to my surprise, and if I can say that. But then when I greeted them, they said to me, "We know that you are here to meet Gloria, but can we talk to you?" Then this was a boardroom. That's what was surprising me. But the questions that were coming from them is like asking me my name, my clan name, where do I come from, what am I doing? That was surprising because I didn't know. I was expecting Gloria to see Gloria. Then they said to me, "Tell us if it may happen that you had to get a job and to cook for an icon, be it a South African or an international icon, what would you do?" Then I said to them, "I'm not job hunting." I wasn't hunting for a job by then. Then they said to me, "No, we understand that. But Sis Gloria said to us, we can ask you that," because we had already asked Sis Gloria about the same question. "But all what we can say to you, what if we can have a better offer for you?" "Oh yes," I said, "if there's a better offer, then I can cook for the icon." Up to the time, let me fast forward it, and I had to go with this guy after they had asked me one question, and I think that that's the question. That day, I thought that that's the question that got me this job, that they asked me, "Tell us, if something happens, somebody comes into your kitchen, you are cooking, someone comes and interrupts you or distracts you in what you are doing, what will you do?" I said, "There's no way that I will even leave my pots with anybody. I will be there until I serve." They put their pants down. They went outside to take a smoke. I even think of them coming back smiling, saying that she's the right one. And I didn't know why am I the right one. So they said to me, "Somebody's coming to pick you up. And the guy that picked you up from downstairs is taking you to Gloria for real now." I came with this guy. I came to this house. And he asked me a very nasty question, smiling at me, saying that, "Sissy, you don't even know me, but you're jumping into a car with somebody that you don't even know. What if I'm going to kill you?" Then I even answered, like, honestly, I said, "But I'm not a threat to you." So he just laughed. We came here. As we were coming here, this house was full of black cars and with people with black and white suits. Then I was asking myself, what is going on now? I don't see Gloria still. But when we go to the kitchen that is the same kitchen that we are using here, I saw Gloria. And then Gloria said to me, "Hi, friend." And then when I just wanted to jump on here and greet her and hug her, this guy said, "No, Sis Glo," later. He took me inside. We had to walk. I had to follow him. I saw just straight in front of me, there were glass doors. I saw Tata Mandela sitting there. I couldn't move. I just standing still. I was stunned. I didn't know what to do. All what was happening, I was shaking. My hands were shaking. I was asking myself, am I seeing him? Is this him? But that came into my mind. I was told about the icon. Must this be the icon that I was told about? But still, I was still shaking. But until he saw me, because he was watching news from the TV, he saw me, and then he stood up. And he opened the door. He just stretched his hand, and he greeted me. He could feel that my hands are still shaking. He said to me, "Do you know this man?" And I think that was the way of trying to calm me down. And I said, "Yes, Dad, I know him." He said, "Where do you know him?" I said, him jokingly, I said to him, "I know him from TV, radio, newspaper." I said, "Well, then, this is the man you're seeing on TV. Don't be scared." And I was shaking still, but he showed me the chair in his lounge and he said to me, "Sit down. Ask me my name, my clan name again." And then he said to me, I know that you are coming from Eastern Cape, but I was told that you are a great cook. Do you think we can cook our own home food?" I didn't hesitate, because now my mind was saying, this is the icon that I was called for. I didn't hesitate. I just said, "Yes, Dada." Then from there, for me now, knowing that when the years were going by serving him, that answer of saying yes immediately was the best answer, because all what I could see him, if somebody is not sure of himself or somebody that doesn't mean anything when you're answering him, he just know that you're not sure. So he said to me, it's okay, you've got the job. And that was it. That's the day I met him.
I mean, where do you even begin putting together a menu? I mean, he really gave you a bit of an indication that he wanted home-cooked meals, meals that he knew from the Eastern Cape. What did that look like?
I don't think he was meaning from the Eastern Cape meals. But I think he was thinking that at home, you know what to cook at home. We are not at the restaurant. We are not anywhere. But here at home, what do we eat? And then I know exactly what to do. Where this thing come from, of cooking, come back. When I say coming back from home, I was just the first girl from my mother. And then I had to do all the cookings at home before my sister grows up. And then coming to serve him and to know that what am I going to cook every day was one of the challenges. Because now I have to know that I'm cooking for somebody. And this person is this person that everybody would like to see him in a health way. But looking at that every day, he was a very health conscious person. So my cooking was starting from home, knowing very well how to cook at home. But the best was not for me to know what to put with what until I told myself that I want to take this thing up. So when I came here, I knew already what I had to do. But thinking about the book, it was something that I've never thought of. But I had a dream of saying one day I will have a cookbook. Knowing from reading in newspapers or the magazines, I've been telling myself I have a dream of having a book. Come Christmas one day, the foundation had sent Anna Trapido, who is an author as well. She was doing Hunger for Freedom, going to all the people, searching for people who have been cooking for Tata for many years, and after when he was in prison and after the prison. But she came to me because the foundation had to send her to me because I was the one who was present that time. So when she came to ask me about the dishes, and I said to her, Anna, I can give you some of the recipes, some of the dishes, but I have a dream. And she said, what is your dream? And I told her that I would love to have a cooking book one day. She said, here I am. Use me. I will help you. I will do all the writing for you. Then you can do all your recipes. That's when it started. I didn't know that I would be author of the cooking books, but thanks to that woman, because she made me sure that you can be an author of a cooking book. And then I started from that day.
And tremendous. And here we are as the second book is lined up almost 10 years later from the first one. What are some of the dishes that people can find in this book? Are they some of the dishes that you cooked for Nelson Mandela way back when?
Oh, yes. Most of them, I've been using them to cook at the house because that's where all my life was. You can remember that I've been there for 22 years with the family. So there was no way that I would have anything hidden behind. But all what I was saying to people when I have the book is that I hide nothing. I'm cooking. That is why I have to share my books, because I want people to know what was that I was eating. What was my family foremost? That was I was cooking for them when I have to be at home with my children and my family. So these are the recipes that when I'm given the money for them, for the petty cash, I will take the money and I will go and take and get the ingredients. I'll come home and I will think of myself, what am I doing with this? I've bought this. What am I doing with it? How am I cooking it? I'll cook it and I'll write down. But the only thing that I was making sure is that when I cook it, let me test it with them at the family house, at the Mandela house. When the plates are coming out clean, that's when I said, this is my next recipe. Then that's how I started piling up my recipes.
And I believe Tata Madiba used to also insist that you would come along sometimes for his trips to cook for him. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I used to travel with him most of the places. I used to travel with him up until one story that I can tell you. There was a day that there was a time that I couldn't go with him. It was a short trip for him, and he was going to London. And then when he got there, because I thought he was going to be there for 4 or 5 days, so when he got there, they called me to say, where are you? Because I was thinking of going to my children, and I had already booked my ticket to go to Eastern Cape, because I know he's not around. As I was in the bus on my way to Queenstown, I got a call from Zelda saying that, Aish, where are you? I said, I'm in my way to home. I said, please make sure you do a turn back. Why? Madiba now is telling us no, he doesn't want to communicate with us, doesn't want to say anything, doesn't want to do any of the jobs that he was supposed to come and do here. So I thought it was a joke. I said to Zelda, no, don't play with me. He said, no, please go back to Joburg. And the meal was just a creamery meal with sour milk. that was the meal that I was supposed to come back and cook and send it to London. I came back, I cooked it, and I had to parcel it up and wrap it up nicely. But I was with Sistoko, who was that as a personal assistant at home. So we had to wrap it up, then we had to write outside that president's medication. And that's how the dish had to go, because it was illegal to send cooked food to another country. So that's how you couldn't take away data from who he was, because that was the meal that I know when he eats, when he's at home, he feels comfortable. That's what comforting.
Madiba was also not a big dessert person, is that right?
No, he wasn't. More especially when it comes to sweets and chocolate things and all these things, because he will hammer to us that feed the children the fruit, just only the fruit sugar must come out of it, not anything like dessert so sweet with sugar. And then, but from one day, we were so surprised when he delved into the children's dessert, and then that was malva pudding. And that's when he started to eat the sweet things. And that's when he goes out to go and eat an ice cream. That was surprisingly, because as he was growing older now, we could see him that he is asking for that ice cream, double toffee ice cream.
What are some of your favorite recipes in this book, Made with Love?
Oh, well, yeah, Made with Love. And you know, when I cook that oxtail, and I know that he used to call his guest whenever I want to dodge him not to cook the meal, because he's been eating for a long time. So when I don't want to cook it, he will just ask Mr. Kathy Ahmed, say, do you want to come to my house? Because he wants me to cook, because he knows Mr. Kathrada loves oxtail stew and semp and beans. So that's when he will get a chance. That oxtail, I had to cook it 3 times in a week. So if I don't do that, I'll be called on the table. Even if there are guests to say, why are you not feeding me well? So that's the dish that I will tell you that I love that dish.
Well, I'm certainly going to be trying it once I take the book home, and it'll be some oxtail for the coming months. You know, the great thing about cooking, about Nelson Mandela, I mean, it's such a great combination, are the stories, these amazing stories that you have. And I'm going to ask you if you've got one more story for us to share with your time cooking for Nelson Mandela.
Oh, yeah, I had this meal, that breakfast. This is a breakfast porridge that I used to cook for him. And the reason why I had to come up with the years that I cooked for him is that porridge, when he just wanted to change from nowhere, then I had to ask. I've been cooking this dish for 18 years for Dada. He has never said anything, has never changed to it. This is a porridge that when we eat it with pap. But him, he wants to eat it with milk, fresh milk, hot milk, with sultana and raisins as his sugar, then the nuts, macadamia nuts, then the mixed nuts. So I've been serving this porridge for all these 18 years. But one day, Dada decided, me knowing him with sugar, he decided that he's going to delve into the most sugar-coated cereal. Then this is a Frosties. And I found him eating this with the grandchildren. And as I was bringing the porridge, he looked at me and I looked at him and I asked the grandchildren, what are you doing to grandpa? Then they didn't answer. Then he looked at me and said, no, darling, don't worry. I'm just tasting. It's just a taste. I thought it was a taste. Come the following day, I found him doing the same thing, being early on the table so that he can go for that porridge. And then now I had to say, no, Dada, no, now. This is not going to be right. Dada, why are you doing this to me? Because medics, the doctors, will just fight with me, because we know that he had to be checked every morning before he goes for his breakfast, that his sugar levels, everything is fine. So now I ask him, that why are you doing this to me? He said, no, I'm not doing this to make you feel bad, darling. But I went straight to the grandchildren. I said, are you guys the ones that are taking this, they're telling Tata to eat this? So they all answered me, no, mama, it's not us, it's grandpa himself. And he said, Goli, come sit down, because now you could see that I'm putting the children into the point. Come sit down here. I sat next to him. He said to me, Goli, I must tell you this. I think I've honored my mother enough. Wow. That touched me very badly, because I didn't know that all these years I was serving him this porridge, I was representing the mother. So it went deeper to what I thought, because he said to me, gave me the lecture of, Goli, I grew up eating this porridge. My mother used to cook it for me. I came to Johannesburg looking for greener pastures. I became a lawyer. I went to prison. I lost my mother's touch with food for many years. Coming out of prison, my mother was not there, and I didn't bury my mother. This is the reason why I had to feel closer to my mother, because of this dish that I know she used to cook it for me. So then I felt, wow, that was too strong, but I didn't know that it was deeper like that to him. But when I looked at him, I could feel that he was doing this just to say sorry to his mother, that I couldn't even bury you, but I've eaten this enough. But I thought that was enough and that was the last day. But he said to me, no, I'll still go back to my porridge, but I wanted to taste this. And for real, he went back to his porridge.
That was my conversation with Xoliswa Nduyiya on the occasion of her latest cookbook titled Made with Love, Recipes and Memories from Nelson Mandela's Personal Chef. And if you get a chance to go to Sanctuary Mandela for a meal, which I do encourage you to do, and I see they're also part of Restaurant Week. So if you enjoy Restaurant Week, make sure you check that out and you can go and experience that. Make sure you say hello to Xoliswa. She's often in the kitchen and she makes the most remarkable food, and she also has the most fantastic stories, as you've obviously heard. You'll also notice that each of the wines on the wine list at Sanctuary Mandela, well, they also have a personal connection and a personal story to Madiba. And also many of the staff at Sanctuary Mandela have also been had a chance to share some moments with him and also tell some personal stories, which is really remarkable. So make it an afternoon. If you go for a lunch or a breakfast, make sure you put a couple of hours aside to really explore this place. And there's also the bench on which he sat regularly and read the newspaper every afternoon, and that's still there, as well as meeting rooms and moments that were critical in shaping South Africa. And if you need some food for the soul and for the body, well, please go visit there. And I must say, the oxtail stew comes highly recommended. And it was one of Madiba's favorite dishes. It's time for a quick musical break and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour. Connect with the Santon Times. Email editor at santontimes.co.za.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good podcast platforms. And that was Mark Foster with Genug, or Enough, if we translate it from German. It's a major hit on radio stations in Germany at the moment, and some might recognize the Bronski Beat Small Town Boy sample that is used. And it's a great transition to give you a few impressions of my recent trip. As I mentioned, I took a trip to Germany for a family wedding and hadn't been there in over 7 years. So I took a direct flight to Zurich and then headed to Bavaria in the south of Germany by train. It was sort of the easiest connection. I hadn't visited family in a very long time, as mentioned, and it was probably one of the most expensive economy class seats I've ever had to pay for. And I don't know if this is a post-pandemic thing or as a result of the pandemic or just the way airlines operate at the moment, but it was remarkable. But it was also at the same time probably one of the most uncomfortable and unpleasant economy class flights I've ever had. And I don't know if it was the Airbus configuration of economy class or this particular airline as to how they configured their seats. But I swear that these seats were the smallest economy class seats I've ever sat in, and not necessarily in terms of width, but in terms of depth. So if you sat in the seat and the person in front of you put their seat back, the screen was literally pressed up virtually almost against your chest. And I mean, you couldn't move left, you couldn't move right, never mind open the tray table. And it was so claustrophobic and so bad at one point that at two occasions, two separate parties ended up getting into a fight. So two lots of passengers ended up having a full-on fight on the plane. The one was a young French guy and a French gentleman in front of him. And as the gentleman in front of him put his seat back, this young man stood up and just pushed the seat back. And these two got into a full-on raucous, which managed to calm down quite quickly. But you could see that the tensions were still going on throughout the night. And the other one started at like 2 or 3 in the morning, when the gentleman next to me had a daughter who kept pushing the seat that had been reclined in front of her, you know, trying to push it back into place, whilst the British gentleman trying to sleep in front obviously then lost his mind and took on the father. And I mean, he then ended up getting up. Cabin and crew got involved. They had to de-escalate this entire thing. I mean, it really is the most unpleasant thing to have to go through. And to some extent, you can understand the justification for some of this frustration because the space was so small. And I don't know if this is an Airbus thing, if this is just the way economy class seats are being configured, or if this is an airline-specific thing. And I also don't quite know if this is related to the fact that we now have something called premium economy. and that premium economy seats have to take up more space, so they have to squash economy class seats together. But I think it's completely unacceptable, and quite honestly, I don't think I will ever fly with that particular airline or that particular airline group again, because it was just ghastly. Anyway, direct flight to Zurich, get to Germany, and it was fascinating to see how Germany had changed over the last 7 years, having not been there for that amount of time. One of the big topics, or one of the hottest topics in that particular part of Germany, south of Germany, are the staff shortages. Can you believe that in Germany they are struggling to find people to work in places like restaurants, supermarkets, any sort of hospitality, even retail? They cannot find people to work. And every single store you walk into, hotel, restaurant, there's a big poster in the window saying, we're looking for managers, we're looking for cleaning staff, we're looking for waiters, we're looking for bottle washers. I mean, you name it. Every single position, there's a shortage. And what that means is that if you go into some of these places, you are left waiting for everything. I mean, I went to a supermarket where I waited about 30 to 40 minutes to pay for my three items because the queues were so long because they only had one cashier who could manage the till. Or you go to a restaurant and there's one waiter trying to run an entire restaurant and probably cook in the kitchen and wash the dishes and. I mean, one of the hotels that people stayed at was said to guests, look, you know what, we can't sort out your room cards right now because we're busy with trying to sort out the lunch service. Can you come back in an hour? Can you take a walk around town and actually come back? And then we can try and sort this out because we don't have enough staff to manage all of this. And it's just the most bizarre thing to be involved with because, you know, here in South Africa, we're sitting here going, we don't have enough jobs, that we've got such a high unemployment rate. And there, it's almost like a complete different conversation where they are literally looking for people to start tomorrow. And where in the past, people were concerned about CVs and qualifications and details and how much experience do you have. Right now, they'll just take whoever can come along and do the job. And the other fascinating thing about the whole thing is that because there's such a demand for people and so many jobs available, you're now finding people taking on jobs. And if you upset them as a manager, let's say you're running the store, this is your coffee shop or whatever, and you reprimand them, or you have sort of the usual conversations that you have when you're running a business and things are not going the way you want them to and you kind of have to bring people back in line, people say, well, you know what, I don't need this in my life, and they resign. And tomorrow they've got a new job because tomorrow there's somebody else looking for staff. And not just that, they might probably get paid a percentage more because that place is also looking for people and they desperately need the staff. They'll pay whatever they've got to try and get that staff in. It is just really remarkable. Another fascinating thing that I experienced as well was the trains. And I mean, Germany especially has been known to be one of those places where people travel a lot with trains. Public transport is a big thing. It is not in the deconstructed state that it is in South Africa, where I can't even remember the last time I took a train, if ever, in South Africa in terms of public transport. But even there, they're starting to take some serious strain. They haven't invested enough money into the infrastructure. So you're now seeing trains running late religiously. In terms of every single train is almost 10, 20 minutes late because of this delay, because of that delay, because of construction, because of something has fallen out there. So they've had to like rearrange and shuffle things. And it's obviously driving people nuts, because if you've got to try and plan a trip of some sort, being used to having a train that's on time, that's clean. I mean, the one train I was on, which I think was a Swiss train, because, you know, if they go across borders, they kind of use different rails. The door came off. The entire door was actually off the hinges of the toilet. So you actually had to get someone else to hold the door in place if you wanted to use the toilet, because the whole door came off. And I thought, wow, Switzerland, what's going on here? This is not what people would expect. Anyway, it was a fascinating time. I also managed to catch two of the Rugby World Cup games in Germany, which was commentated by a panel of German rugby experts, which is quite interesting because rugby isn't even really a thing in Germany. I mean, they do have leagues and they do have a team, but it's not on the level that we know rugby to be at. And they even pulled in Durban-born Howard Carpendale. I don't know if you remember Howard Carpendale, very well-known singer who made his career in Germany. And he even came in to comment on one of the games. So, yeah, I don't know how much he knows about rugby, but, you know, obviously coming off a very low base, anything goes. I mean, I think half the commentary is explaining the game and then explaining what's just happened and explaining what the positions are and how the game works, et cetera, et cetera. But nice to see that there's other countries getting involved in rugby. So we've got fans in other parts of the world as well. Well, that's it for the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and is always available as a podcast on Apple, Google and Spotify. And if you want to get in touch, you can email editor@sandtontimes.co.za or connect on social media at Sandton Times and visit the website www.sandtontimes.co.za. And feel free to send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, your input. Always great to hear from you. And thank you to all our guests who made time to be on the show this week, as well as Vincenzo. Thank you for being here again. And yeah, let's enjoy the quarterfinals this week. Fingers crossed. It's a bit of a hairy one because I think France has been playing well. Home ground advantage. We want to win this game, but at the same time, you know, upsetting the host nation, I don't know, doesn't buy you any points. But we're hoping for the best for the Bokke. Thank you to the Sandton Times team, as well as everyone at Mix 93.8. And of course, thank you to you for listening, getting in touch, and let's connect again next week.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to the Sandton Times Hour. And if you enjoyed it, be sure to share it.